Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 284, my chat with Minneapolis comedian John Gebratatios. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. I have been reading all sorts of different things, from that Russell Brand book that I was super into to the book I am doing research for my new story about slavery in New England. There is so much on there, and it is just so helpful to be able to just listen to it as opposed to pick up a book and read it. My brain just turns off when I have to stare at a book, but when I can listen to it, it absolutely makes sense. It helps me to soak in the information. It's just a different kind of learning, and I am learning so much with the Audible app. So go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today, and you can learn lots of stuff like me. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. Sometimes we work with podcasters to connect them with marketing people or business managers or help to get different guests and whatnot. And other times we're helping podcasts to do the complete editing package. Like, you know, they send us the interview and we're putting it all together as an episode. Whatever it is that you need for your podcast, please let us know. We are happy to help you, and we are here and ready and excited to do it for you. So give us a call, check out podcastcadet.com, mention code YBY20, and you'll get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. We can't wait to be there for you. Podcastcadet.com. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is our resource for vegan-friendly whole plant extract CBD oil. Check out TrueHempScience.com to see all the CBD products available to you now. There's all sorts of stuff on this website. You really need to check it out. It's not just tinctures or even lotions. You know, there's also CBD that you can smoke. So if you're like, man, I just really want to smoke something, you can. There's like CBD bud that you can smoke. It makes you feel better. It calms you down, but it doesn't have the like crazy intensity of THC. Plus, there's also CBD edibles, which, of course, you get with your order when you use the code YESBUTWHY7 to get 7% off your order of $50 or more. Check them out. They're really amazing. They're local to Austin, and I have met the owner. Good guy. So I'm telling you, you can trust him. TrueHempScience.com. This week on Yes But Why, I got to interview John Gebratatios, performer, improv instructor, and the director of diversity and inclusion at Huge Improv Theater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Over the past few years, John has become a leader in the efforts to change the face of American improv, making it a more welcoming and representative art form. Listen in as we discuss improv and what that has taught us about confidence, accountability, and commitment. This was a great conversation. We both really shared a lot with each other. I hope you guys get into it. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 284, John Gebratatios and what improv teaches us about humanity. Enjoy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
For me, I guess creatively, everything had to be creative when it's a young black boy in Minneapolis, and it's, I don't know, the 80s, and my parents are immigrants from Eritrea, so I think a lot of the immigrant story I kind of like picked up, and was a translator and an only child. The mother has schizophrenia and father dealt with the depression and alcoholism. And so both were not there. And at the same time, I had a sense of responsibility to them. And that requires a certain balance that you have to have. And I think a lot of people can relate to that kind of caretaking you have to do for like any kind of relative growing up. And here the creative part, I think, is finding ways to seek out joy in darkness. So, I'll never forget so many things. Like one time in the projects, a friend of ours' sister got into college, a Carleton College. And it's like, you know, one of these nice liberal arts colleges, and all the immigrants love it. Everybody, you know, like, oh, get into a good, you know, the education system, and then the top. Oh, Carleton College, they love her. So I got the crew together. We made a rap song. We made a rap song celebrating her. Not only a rap song, we did choreo. So we had younger sisters from, you know, friends. They did the backup dancing because we thought it'd be good to have backup dancers for the rap. And then it doesn't stop there. A truck one day dropped off like free clothing. So we just snatched up like, I don't know, 5 or 6 just black shirts, and I cut them up and just grabbed some paint. So we had like a matching look with the, like, I don't even know what the logo was or whatever we were called, Up the Hill Kids, you know, and just having like a tiny event for something that's like, you know, it's a pretty big deal. Any, you know, for kids to get into college, get accepted, but I don't know. It was like, you know, in all this like darkness everywhere, everyone's family struggling. Everybody's like seeing all. So we just took like, we just made everything an excuse to want to have a good time, make everything bigger than it needs to be. So if we play basketball, probably by the end of the day, we'll, or somewhere in the middle of the series of games, we'll also have like a impromptu slam dunk contest with arbitrary rating, you know, in real like pomp, like a lot of buildups, music, and a whole lot of like entrances, and just a lot of show, you know, just really, just for the fun of it all and the creativity. And that's like how you, you know, you keep each other. You keep each other's spirits up, I think.
Wow. It's so great that your friends in the neighborhood were all down to perform with you as well, though. I mean, I definitely found my theater friends later, but my younger friends when I was like in elementary school and stuff were kind of like, wow, she is loud and wild. So
No, don't get into it. I had to sell it. I had to package it differently. I mean, this is, you know, I wasn't saying, hey y'all, have you seen The Sound of Music? Are you guys interested in cats? Now I had to be like, I want to rap. You know, just like a challenge. Like, oh, you got rap? You can rap? Can you rap? And then they were like, I can rap. Okay, well, here, why don't we do this? And then, you know, once you hear one of your friends do like a verse, you just go, wow, we are not going back to whatever we were before. Like, you just crossed a new, like, you wrote that, and then you said it.
You know what, though? That makes me think about improv. It's beautiful. Because, it's like, because, like, it's a threshold. Like, I'm thinking, you're talking about, like, kids writing rap. And I was like, I couldn't write a rap right now. Like, and I would not be confident enough to say it in front of people. Yeah. It's not an easy art. Like, maybe Sound of Music could have been easier. I know it's harder sell, but it was like, guys, listen, singing in harmony a lot easier than all of us coming up with a freestyle rap that we then do to celebrate her going to school. Like, that's so hard.
I know. But look, this is what the power of representation is. So a lot of the people you see are like you who are doing it. You're like, yeah, I could do it.
Sure.
They're like me. If they could do it and I hear people like me doing it around all the time, I could do this. I'd be like, I'll fail a little bit, but I could do it. Like, that just is like, you just, there was never a discussion about can I, it's just whether or not I would or wouldn't. I think that's a kind of like was the assumption we had with everybody. And I mean, we had revelations like after to be like, oh, you know who put me on the Flowing? Craig. Yeah, Craig put me on. And putting somebody on is like, I think what you're talking about too with improv, where it's like, hey, we're going to do this thing scary. And I'm going to invite you and, you know, like a trapeze act. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just ask you to jump and you got to trust I'm going to be there. Like, that's what Craig did. Craig caught Frank. I'm just making up names.
Sure.
Craig caught Frank. Frank was like, okay, I'm going to try. And Frank had a couple of shaky bars, but Craig caught him and they were okay in this metaphor of black kids figuring out how to rap.
Helping each other out. Yeah. No, I like the idea though that there's this transference of confidence. You know, it's like, hey man, it's not can you, it's will you. And there's something great about that. I wish like I could live my whole life like that.
Me too.
You know, this idea of like, I'm always like, I can't do that. Right. As opposed to not just like, it's not a matter of can't, it's a matter of won't. that's so strong and great. And that totally is the beauty of children for sure. Like the confidence, the like, there is no limit. I can jump off this bridge and it's going to be fine. Like,
and
so
you add
many
on top
things.
Of that, the hood is just like a place where you have to be, you have to perform that. If you don't, you're doing it. Like once you step outside your bedroom and you are perceived, you're putting on this, you just have to. You have to. You cannot not. And it just becomes culture. And then, you know, people do therapy later and figure out like, oh, that's what that was about.
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. Okay. I understand.
I like the idea that in this story that people are going to therapy. How helpful. That's nice. Yeah, I was like, I feel like a lot of masks I put on in my life, I am not talking to my therapist about. So I'm going to make a note about how I should mention that to him now. Hey, buddy, can we talk? I know that we're usually talking about me in my 40s right now. Could we go back to me at 5 and the mask I'm putting on?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Absolutely.
But whatever stage you find in your life, if you're the kind of person that wants to perform, you'll find a stage. And I suppose to a certain extent, the fact that you were able to have these opportunities to do these performances and that you're right, there is a sort of like in child crowds, like there's a lot of like, hey, I'm cool. Let me show you how. And that's
with
fun.
Excitement.
Yeah.
That excitement feeling. That's a good feeling to have before jumping in a scene. Not, you know, if you take it verbatim, it probably sounds, it reads a little like weird, like cocky kind of thing. Like, that's a little weird, but you know, but more like so confident that, you know, it's like beyond their shell. Like it's just coming from a place that's bigger than them, it feels. And I think that's kind of like, that's a good way to jump into a scene for me, or to begin a project or whatever. It's like, okay, I've made up my mind. I know I'm doing this. I'm all in and I'm excited. And this watch, I don't know what's about to happen, but I know it's going to be good. I just have a feeling in this, there would have to be some sort of like weird catastrophe, like a hurricane, earthquake, like to really ruin what it's about. It has to be something on a cataclysmic, whatever that word is.
Cataclysmic?
Cataclysmic Cadillac had to come on and just and derail the that's a good feeling is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it.
You know, I wonder. I like the idea that everybody that you're growing up with also had this confidence. I have found during the course of my life that it was mostly just the theater people that I knew. I had no idea, but you're right. Like I feel that in my own self. Like I have the inner voice that's all like, you're going to do this. It's going to be great.
That's right.
And you're going to make it and it's going to be wonderful. Yeah. And you know, it leads into the theater that I do and the creative life that I live. But I only recently realized that other people weren't like that. Like I was like, wait, I'm sorry, what? You don't think that you're amazing and that everyone should listen to your voice at all times? I don't understand. Yeah. I have hundreds of hours of my voice on the internet and there should be more.
I don't trust that. I don't trust them. I think they're phony and we should hold them and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. I disagree. I would probably entertain that maybe they might have stage fright here or there or reasonable insecurities, but I fully disheartenedly disagree that anybody who's been in a project that's artistic or whatever didn't have some sort of like, you know what? Not only am I gonna draw with a pencil the greatest Lisa Simpson, it will be hung in a museum. They will write papers. The papers will write about me. Everybody, if you jump on a stage, you gotta have that mindset a little bit or a lot. There is no none of it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, that's, and I feel like when I teach improv, I feel like that's my first, I love teaching 101. I love cool, me yeah. some newbies. Walk in and tell me you don't know what improv is. Let me tell mm-hmm. you. Like, mm-hmm. that's my favorite because you get a lot of that. You get a lot of the shy guys. You get a lot of the people yeah. who are like, I am interested in this. However, the voice inside of me says, no, no, please run away. And I'm like, oh, we're not running away today. Hold on. Yeah. You want to hang yeah. out with me? I promise. It's going to be a good time.
That's right. That's right.
But
the doors are unlocked. You're welcome to go. But but you should consider how easy this is. I'm making this easy.
Look also, this idea of, and I'm even thinking just now because we're bringing it up, like this confidence yeah. thing is built yeah. into my teaching. Like I'm all like,
for sure.
Hi, how you doing? I'm pretty absolutely. Amazing at teaching. And
yep.
I just
yep.
want you guys to know that I'm going to do a magic trick and then you're going to be amazing.
Oh,
like what?
I love that. I love that. There is teachers that are like preachers, and honestly, those ones I'm not that isn't my style, but man, I love watching them go to work. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Like I got a friend, I'll say Bruno, who we teach these workshops, and he is one of the best teachers I've ever met. Like watching him just in the workshop, just go into you know, facts and a lot of great points, you know, bring up historical events and give context and also like, you know, give challenges. But all the while he's emoting, he's sweating, you know what I'm saying? And he feels it fully. He's like fully 100% there. There's been a few times, you know, we have to stop, pull over, cry. Like it's moments that are just like rich because it's like, you know, the for those, man, it's so beautiful for them. They're stepping into that role with so much integrity. You know, they believe that it is a duty to get not only the message out, but the feeling and everything. That their job is to convey exactly what they mean and feel. And then they pray to God they find the right words in that moment quickly, because you know what I'm saying? The students, if you're not clipping them along, their own insecurities, they'll check out mentally. So yeah, that isn't, you know, I mean, I really enjoy those kinds of teachers. Not to get off on a rant. I don't mean
no, that. You're perfect. Don't even worry about a thing. You know, you make me think of, you mentioned that you love the way your friend teaches, but that's not your style. What do you think your style is? You teach improv and do you teach also acting and speech as well?
No,
or is it just improv?
I don't know if you could tell by my lack of care of the English language. I'm mumbling and I don't have no, you know, but but I do, you know, I teach, I think my style of improv teaching, probably, I don't even know. I feel like the energy that I have sometimes is like, hey, this is what I've discovered. You know what I mean? Like, good luck. You know, I think you could do it. I'll never not believe in you. I believe in you more than you will believe in you always, like forever. Just know that. But at the same time, I feel like let's not forget that I'm also in this heist with you. Like I'm not some other square person. Like, no, I'm in this. So take it or leave it. But like, yeah, I really acknowledge that there's a status thing happening, like with me having a, you know, a higher status. I can acknowledge that, but I strongly will just address them as their most confident self that I already have in my kind of mind. So it's like I don't really have room for that kind of, you know, status push and pull. So it's very much, here's what it is. You know, and I will say with words the things that need to be said, if it's a note or if I'm not clear, I'll be like, stop me. You know, like everybody has the agency to call time out at any point in the class for any reason. Just makes sense. You know what I mean? Why?
Sure.
Why not? While we're all learning. So that's kind of my style. I just feel like I feel like I am art directing in a way. So the way I think of art directors for maybe an advertising firm, And the way that they will understand what the goal is, and it's their job to kind of like pull out of people or finding the right talent or what have you to kind of create this end goal. So if it's teaching improv, it's great. We'll get a group of folks and hopefully they'll get these messages of they're enough, that they can play, that they can, you know, do these things that are kind of surface level, but you got to have that in your mind as a teacher already, because the curriculum could change every day, and it can, and it should. So we don't really, it's not really a curriculum that's like driving into your vision of where you want these folks to go. So yeah, it's kind of like how I enjoy that craft part of it, is figuring out the group and seeing what's best for the group.
I like the idea that, you know, you're an improv teacher. Why not have a little bit of improvisation in the style, both for your friend who does the sort of preacher style? He has to have the ability to, you know, deal with what's happening in the room. But then, you know, you're talking about how it's like, you know, from the base level, I know you can do it. So let me just help you see your own skills. And that's beautiful. Something else that you mentioned was the idea of status. And I think that that's really smart to talk about, because I feel like if a big discussion that's happened a lot online during the pandemic, since we weren't in theaters doing work, everyone was like, hey, let's talk about what we do. That helped a lot, because I think it helped establish, sort of dispel a bit of what the hierarchy is and how, like, you know, anybody can be this. It's not about this guy's not necessarily better than that guy just because, you know, he did this. It's really just how it sets up. And so my effort to dispel that notion to my students is to use status in a scene work situation. But then when I explain it, I explain to them that status could change. Like right now, I'm high status because I'm the teacher and I'm talking to you. But if I talk to Tim and he's a lawyer and I need his help, he's high status because I am coming to him for help in what he has expertise in, right? So it's really just a matter of figuring it out from there. I said anybody can have high status and low status. And we're going to do some scenes. You're probably going to make some assumptions about what people's status are when you do those scenes. But it could be any way, right? Because it doesn't, it isn't set in stone. And I think that that is great too, especially for students, so that they feel like they can talk to you, so that it's not like, oh, well, you know, he'll never understand my stage fright. And you're like, dude, we're all afraid all the time. It's fine. We're just barreling through this with like bare confidence and total adrenaline, you know?
And to that, as a person who, I don't know how many years now, but I quit drinking when I was 21. And so this makes me think about accountability. So I will spell out boundaries if I'm aware that these need to be talked about. I love it because, you're right. Like this whole forum, art form, and then teaching, and then with lockdown, everybody was able to assess, like, what are we actually doing? And I think in that question, I think a lot of people have discovered, like, oh yeah, accountability is important. What does that look like in our space? What does that look like in me? How am I going to keep myself accountable? I mean, to be honest, that is my favorite part of teaching, is talking about all the boundaries or whatever, because it's like, whew, now we're focused up. I feel like, you know what I'm saying? What may seem like, you know, rigid guidelines or whatever, it's saving a lot of guesswork and that other extra fear. Joe Bernardo says, like, improv's already scary enough. We don't need to make it scarier, having you worry whether or not somebody's going to pick you up in the middle of this class and you don't even, you're like, I didn't plan for that in my day, you know? So I like that. And I like to feel like, you know, I just feel grounded teaching with these accountability things in place. Nah, because I know I'm not a good human being. You know what I mean? Like, I'm okay. You know, I'm a human being and I'm flawed just like all of us. So these accountability things are so good. It helps me like focus on just the art, and I don't have to deal with the humanity part of this art form.
I think it is really great to be upfront about boundaries and stuff like that, especially with improv, where it's like, hey, we're all going to make it up. So if there's something that you're like not cool talking about or doing, let's talk about that right now, because then we're going to go out and get on that stage and anything can happen. And we'll try real hard not to do those things that you guys don't jive on, but that's okay. Like, yeah. I want everyone to feel comfortable. Well, that's the other part too, is that like when you're making stuff up, you have to like establish that everybody can be comfortable with one another, right? Because there has to be a level of trust that can be had, or else you're not going to take the chances that you need to try. You know, the best improv scenes are the big leaps where you're like, I didn't think this was going to work, and then it works, you know? So you need to be able to know that the people who are around you really do have your back. Mm-hmm. It can be so tough. It can be so tough because, like, even what we were talking about before, like, people who are going on stage come in with some ego. Like, and there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of trouble with that. You know, sometimes that gets in the way, and sometimes that causes people to have bad behavior. And, you know, that... I think it's really just a matter of learning as you go along and trying to like take the lessons that you've learned. And for me, try to reinfuse them back to my students. We were talking about not having a curriculum. When I taught 101, I had a curriculum, right? Because I was working for a theater and it was the same stuff that I taught every single time. It was sort of the base level of what they needed to know before they did the other levels and, you know, tried wacky stuff and you know, jumped off the bridge. And I was like, here's how you hook up your harness and this is what you do. And this is your safe word. You know, like all the things that I'm setting up or laying the groundwork. And so they were the same things over and over. But were they always the same to me? Did I always teach them the same? No. Because my life experience, my experience in the world, and my experience in improv have illuminated different ideas. So sometimes I'm really focused on, you know, status, or sometimes I'm really focused on character. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, the key to the whole thing is, you know, and it's different every time. I mean, I've taught hundreds of 101s, and I bet you if I were to tell each class the other random thing I said was the most important thing, they'd be like, what? But you told us. And I was like, yeah, man. Hey, at the moment, I really thought that was the most important thing. But then 6 months later, after I'd taught that 20 times, I was like, but the real thing is, you know. I think it's a matter of allowing yourself. You were talking about earlier, where I'm a human, so I make mistakes. I also think we have to allow that we are evolving human beings, that we are... people who learn and change. And when there's stimulus coming in from here or there, it changes the way we look at how we present ourselves or what say, you know, and to bring it even into the idea of the pandemic talks that we've had, where it was like, what is the accountability? How should we be acting? Now that we've learned that, now that we've had that discussion, that leads us to the next level of like this beautiful art form that really can be beautiful if we, like you said, we open up with the discussion of accountability and the discussion of boundaries. Let's truly, what can we do to truly have trust? You know, and that's a tough, tough thing. I don't trust anybody. But when I'm on stage, I have to really look and be like, okay, who are these people and how much do I trust them? What can I do in, you know, and how safe am I? You know?
So, I'll add a practical thing on, just to add a little thing, because I just recently, we just had a thing. So this is the little practical takeaway. Well, this is the saying we love huge is protect people. You know, that's just it. We protect our people. That's all. And so I was just at a, another show somewhere else, and there was just a patron that shouldn't be there. That was there. That's all I'll say. And he was just reminding me, like, talking about when you're on that stage and you gotta, okay, I'm performing with people, I got to trust them. And well, that is, you know, we also think about, like, strangers are walking in off the street to come see your show in a new world that we're in. So we got to think beyond just the legit stage spatially. You know, it spreads all the way out beyond the walls and the parking lot and so forth. And I think the more we think that way, I think just that feeling that I like of tightening things up so that people can feel free. And that's just, it's nice to just have those things in place. Having a whole, it's boring, but it's kind of important to just know what the plan in motion would be if X happens, if this kind of event should happen, if somebody should pop up in off the street. What do we have in plan? Like, what's in place for us to do? Does the staff know this? How do we tell them? How do we practice it? We got to think about all that now. I don't think it's anything to really take lightly. And because it's a coveted thing anyway. This special thing is fleeting. This performing live is kind of special. So why not give it? The best setting it should be on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I don't. I think it's a very important topic to think about.
You're listening to Boring Hour with John Gilbert.
No, this is not boring at all. Absolutely not. We are in a new world right now, The tone of everything is a little more dangerous than it used to be. Everyone's a little bit more on edge about everything all the time. And it is tough. It's tough to ask people to put their guard down. Oh yeah, I'll take a story. Don't call it boring, because it's not. Okay. It's a good story. Okay, everything that you're saying so far and in the future, not boring stories. Important, because this is the world that we care about.
All right. Well, get ready. I'm winding up. Here comes a riveting story coming your way.
No, I can't wait.
This is actually been, we live streamed it, but, there was this, incident where at the end of the summer we had a BIPOC improv intensive. And on the last day, it was just a 4-day class. Me and Joe Bernard co-taught, lovely short form intensive. Great. All BIPOC students. On the last day, one of the students, Sonny, is dear to my heart. Sonny was like running late, and I'm wondering where Sonny is. Sonny finally calls, and I answer, and the first thing I hear is, "John, I'm gonna be late. I'm in the alley, and I'm stuck. This truck pulled up in front of me. It's these two white guys." I was like, "Whoa!" Like, this is a black woman, just in Minneapolis. So to give a little context, we're blocks away from where another black man was murdered by the police. At our theater, it's uptown as well, which is, I would say, where gentrified sections go to play in their bars and try to experience nightlife that isn't so downtown. It's an artistic kind of like mashup of, and there's a big lake over there, which is another symbol for a resource in a city. It's like one of these areas that were just cut, like the mayor will put money down to protect certain pockets in the city. We know that. And this is one of those. All right. I think we got it. I got it. We got it. All right. So
I appreciate the explanation. I don't know anything about Minneapolis. So that's, I appreciate you.
Yeah. And so I just quickly, I'll give you how I went in my mind. It's all live streamed too on Facebook. So if you anybody can see it, but, this everybody understands this feeling of like a mama bear, like that protective drive that just comes out. You're just like, whoa, it is happening. And you go to another place. And so that kind of happened. And then I just saw Jill was talking to students at the timeout. I was like, time out. And then Jill was like, "What's up?" I was like, "Sonny called. She's in the alley. These two white men are in the truck and they blocked her." Boom. I couldn't even finish saying that. Jill got up. We was like started marching to the back alley, and sure enough, there was Sonny. And I just told the students, though, before I went to the alley, I was like, "Look, we're gonna go to the alley and take care of a situation. You're welcome to join in solidarity with Sonny, or you're welcome to stay here in solidarity with Sonny. But this is what's gonna happen either way. Do not feel any type of it was quicker than this, but I really was trying to convey whatever you do, I'll support your choice." Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. So boom, we get to the alley, and then that's when it really set off. Like, there was really a pickup truck blocking Sonny in her car. Like, imagine being a black woman and just two white men in a truck are just like cussing you out, like real tough talk, like back up, blah, 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 blah. They're probably saying all kinds of stuff. And it just, you know, it just, it's already hard, right, to just be a black woman. We just know factually that there's a lot that is in place that is an obstacle and some. So just like looking at that, like you don't need to have very many assessing skills to realize like optics are horrible. You're harming and you're doing huge harm. Like every second that goes by is like major like impact having on Sunny and now everybody else who's like witnessing this. And it's just stubborn, racist, inherently misogynistic white men. That's case in point. They legally were in the wrong. They were morally not there, in my opinion. And it was just a back and forth. So me and Jill had to, you know, in real time, you're watching me and Jill in real time figure out our system for handling, you know, a situation that goes beyond our brick walls in our theater. What happens when it's in the parking lot? We're in real time trying to figure out whatever the appropriate line is, because they've gone, these two white men have gone so way out of their way to try to scare and you know, bring just a violent, like just authoritative, like kind of like statement. I don't even know why. There's nothing beyond just they were wrong. That makes sense. After that, they're wrong. That's it. And racist. I just completely forgot to say this was racist. Like I just kept telling them, like you this is racism. You are racist. And we learned a lot throughout the whole thing. Joe at one point was like, well, I don't know, trying to find solutions. And it was like, you know, there's the only solution is they have to back up and they have to take accountability for what they're doing. There is no other. That's just kind of where my mind went to with that mom bear protection, right? There's no other way because it, in my mind was if they think they could do this today, well, you know, I forgot to also say this guy lives right next to the theater. So him going in the alley is him going to what he thinks is his home. So he's bringing this like I'm home energy, but it's like, no, you live on a block that has an apartment complex next to the theater. And what divides us is this parking lot that we pay rent on. It is ours. And it gets deeper, too, because the landlord of his apartment is also our landlord. So our landlord has been reported to have been a Nazi supporter. He financially supported David, I don't know, the politician. And they release, you know, who's made donations. And this politician was like particularly known for being a Nazi supporter and a Klan's grand wizard, you know, supporter. So that was our landlord. And when confronted about it, because he's one of these people in town that owns a bunch of properties and bars or whatever, you know, he was outed. And now the whole city's like, you know, trying to cancel him. But it's like, how? Because when people own property, they just get to own property and the world, you know, we don't have laws in place that says you can't be a shitty property owner because they can be. And that's what he is. So he's tolerating this tenant, right, that's harassing us. Normal circumstances, I believe a tenant would hold that person accountable as much as they can, especially as it infracts on our business. I'm not even talking race. I'm just talking if we're going to go just straight up monetarily, that's a horrible tenant to have, because you would think he'd want to keep us. But this is the other issue. What do you tell an old white man that has a bunch of money and, you know, is playing their own game and whatever they are in it for probably has nothing to do with whatever would benefit the whole, at least their direct community that they spend the majority of their time in. Mm-hmm. None of their thoughts are concerning how do I support them ever. And so with this being the context that we have in the world, how do we protect our people? That's the most important question. And it shows up creatively. I mean, it shows up in all these kind of ways. But it's been a good.
I didn't see the video. Is Sunny okay?
Yeah, Sonny's good.
Oh,
Sonny's good.
Oh, good. I was worried. I was down to hear the larger context of the story, but I was also like, but wait, hold on. Is Sonny all right?
Yeah.
I'm very concerned. She's in the alley in my head. And I'm like, wait, hold on.
I'm sorry. I didn't tell you. Yeah, it all works out.
Oh, good. Okay. I mean, those guys hating themselves and everyone around them, you know, that's really there. The idea of choosing negativity is like mind-blowing to me, especially when the world is just constantly showing, like sending negative stuff at you.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why?
Right.
You know, like, why is that what you're putting out ever, you know? But I don't know. I think it's really born of how much you feel confident in your own ability to be, you know, taken care of in that moment. Like I have this hubris that says I can be the mama bear. For sure.
Yeah.
All the time. As you're telling the story, I'm literally imagining the alley next to the theater where I've spent most of my time in Austin and thinking like, oh man, what would I be doing? Oh man,
exactly.
I'd be throwing punches. I'd be yelling, you know, like, and then also thinking of the various people who I have personally kicked out of the theater and like what was that about and how that affected that man. I've definitely mama bear a lot.
Let me ask you this. With all that then, with everything we kind of you've been through, what is your work in improv taught you about humanity?
Say again, what's the question?
Like, what is your work in doing improv so far? What has it taught you about humanity?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to say that working in improv has taught me about humanity. I think the number one thing that I've learned is that, like, no one believes in themselves. 0% of everyone believes in themselves. Like we talked about earlier, do performance people tend to come in with confidence? Yeah. But that's the drive that leads somebody. In the way that a person who wants to write a novel always has ideas in their brain. Like that's just who we are, right? But that doesn't mean that we don't also have the voice inside your head that goes like, yeah, what you're doing is a wrong move. You shouldn't do that. But will they hate you if you do that? So I think it's part of, after I taught for 4 or 5 years, I started opening every one of my classes with a speech to the students about how I acknowledged that they had a voice in their head that told them that they were bad. And I just, I know it's there. It's in me too. But while we're here every week, I just want you to ignore that voice just for 2 hours, not forever. I know you can't. It's tough. I can't. But while we're together, I want you to ignore it. And I will be here as your anchor to save you. If there's a real reason why that voice needs to tell you, hey, buddy, stop doing that, I'll mention it. I'll be that voice for you. But I don't want you to listen, because usually that voice is just there ruining a good time. Like, it's not going to help. And that in and of itself is what I think begets all negative behavior, is that we don't believe in ourselves. We don't like ourselves. We think that we are making the wrong choices. And then so the balance of that is being nervous that you're not going to do the right thing and then being paralyzed by that, or by pushing past it and occasionally really making, like, just putting your foot in some poop on the street. And a lot of times the people can't, and in improv, the other part that we're teaching them is like, you put your foot in some poop. Hey, it's all right. There's poop everywhere. It's all right. Hey, make it funny. It's a good time, you know?
Right.
Hey, who doesn't have a little poop on their foot, right?
Hey.
But some people get really, like, shameful and upset, and their walls go up, you know?
Yeah.
And then as soon as that wall goes up, they're mean, right? They're like, forget it. No. And so every time I see a person who is, like, yelling or mean, I'm thinking about, like, not these gentlemen in the alley who can screw. I'm talking about like people who are watching a show who, like, maybe are heckling or they're like not getting it. So they're like, what is it? What even is this? I don't get what's, and you're like, shh, get it later, talk about it later. That is just them hating themselves. And it's coming, mm-hmm. it's spilling out over, right? Yeah. Their hatred for themselves just spills out and it fell. Oh, it landed at you. And so they've mm-hmm. decided to let you step in their self-hatred for a little while. And they're like, yeah, you're the worst. And it's like, mm-hmm. they're just saying they're the worst, right? You know?
Right.
And like, so when I'm trying to teach people is that the world is like, when I teach classes to people in improv, I'm like, listen, the world is crazy and insane. And whatever you navigate outside of this room with me is probably insane. You know, whatever mm-hmm. things you have to deal with, your own personal life, your ups and downs, then politics, then just general humans all around you being crazy. It's mm-hmm. wild. So mm-hmm. while we're here, we're going to be kind to each other. And we're going to be kind to ourselves. And then that's the only way we can make the fertile ground required to grow the plant that is the improv scene. Like, otherwise, we're never going to do it. So that, right. I guess, is kind of how I look at it. Now, I will put a caveat on one thing, and I'd love to hear your answer to your same question as well. What have you learned about humanity from teaching improv? But I want to let you know, I'm learning, as you're telling me about what Minneapolis is like, I live in Austin. I started doing improv in Austin. So I didn't mm-hmm. find out improv was a thing until I was 30. And I had been doing theater stuff all mm-hmm. everywhere, like plays and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And in plays, there's hierarchy and there's different mm-hmm. levels. And there's like, this play is important and that play is important and that play is not important. Mm-hmm. So there's already sort of like a little bit of obvious self-hatred everywhere in theater. But in improv, it acts like it's, you know, sweet and kind and wonderful, right? Mm-hmm. And my personal experience, well, two things. One, Austin, I always say to people, is a magical wonderland. I am from Boston, as I've mentioned. It's a rough and tumble kind of place. There's a lot of yelling and hatred. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everyone hates each other and themselves. And
warms my heart. So familiar.
And then I moved to New York and I make a joke that I'm the only person in the world who ever went to New York and was like, oh my God, everyone's so friendly. But New York's still tough, still rough, yeah. you know. When I moved to Austin and people were mm-hmm. like, this town's not any good, I'm all like, are you kidding? Mm-hmm. Everything works. The roads yeah. are complete. There's like, right. there's a choice of three or four apartment complexes that will allow me and my bad credit into it. I feel pretty good. I think like this place is all right. And yeah. then I found improv, and improv was this beautiful, beautiful landscape of yes and pleasantries and loveliness. And yeah. then, and this is where my story goes a little rough, and I don't usually talk about this on the podcast. You're getting it out of me, John.
Hey.
The school that I came up in ended in ruin and sadness because the people that ran it were being terrible humans, were taking advantage of students, were taking advantage of people who were trying to book shows, were running their business terribly, like no business sense, no, like it's like you're when you're talking about your landlord and you're like, well, at least we could talk to him about money and that would make sense. These people who ran the theater that I first came up in, where I tried to be the mama bear, where I tried to create a safe space, were essentially behind my back ruining all of that. They were stealing money from people. They were trying to exchange sex for shows. I mean, there was just a number of terrible things. And it all happened without me even seeing it, right? I was put in one place and then the other stuff was happening somewhere else. And they were and nobody was trying to sleep with me. So I didn't know that anybody was doing it. And then all of a sudden it exploded a few years ago. And now my entire feelings on how the theater was and how I came up and what I learned is tarnished, right? By these negative people. Now, during this time, since I have my baby, the breakup, the explosion of my theater happened right after I had my baby. Now, my baby's four, okay. So it's about 4 years since that's happened. But I've had to reinvent how I even think about improv. And thank God I've had this podcast to talk to people like you and other improv leaders across this country and across the other countries to kind of get back to this positive idea of supporting each other and protecting each other and really being able to be a mama bear that stands up for the right things. When, you know, before, I feel like it's a big leap, but I've said to a few people occasionally, I feel like Ghislaine Maxwell. Like, I was like, was I leading lambs to slaughter? Like, I'm sorry. Ghislaine Maxwell was the gal who was bringing little young girls to Jeffrey Epstein and his cohorts.
Oh,
so she was the gal who was like facilitating it. And I was like, was I facilitating terrible things happening to people? Was I like helping this predator to get his prey? Like, and so improv as a practice has shown me that people are hating of themselves, and the hating of yourself can go so far that it's not just about ruining your own life. It's about ruining other people's lives. So sorry, my story was like super big, but it's like a larger, like it frames everything. Whenever I'm talking to people about improv, whenever I'm talking about building communities and all this talk that we've had about safe spaces and trying to make sure that there are, it just makes me so upset that that's all I wanted to do for years. And I was not doing it. And it just, I've talked to so many people and people are like, oh, you know, don't take it on yourself. And I was like, yeah, that's great. But it still happened under my watch without me seeing it. I was blind and I won't.
And thank God for that. Like, thank God that happened because we need to know that that's how real it is. The stuff that people are talking about, the podcast to the stage, people hear nice words, but what happened with you is like the real deal. Like, can people live these things off stage? You could, you did, but it's proven that not everybody does what they say they're doing. They're not walking what they're talking. And thank God that happened because there's actual proof. Right. Like, here, look, no, there are cases of that. Now, this is why we're going to happily have accountability, happily have these boundaries, happily have transparency with proper context, happily, because we like, you know, thank God in a more like, you know, the journey of life. Like, we appreciate the things that were done that were unfortunate because of the gifts that they bear, you know. And it's like, this is what we get to reap, is now we can, I joyfully move forward with confidence. If anybody is like, oh my gosh, you're talking about safe space and the race too much, shut up. You don't understand. There's been many case studies of why this is going to just make everything better for us moving forward. I'm trying to live my life like, you know what I mean? Like, everything I know that improv can provide, I'm not trying to have it like yucked up with her, like, you know, just trust me. No. I want to trust you the best way I know how.
Yeah.
Here's some great guidelines. And if you can't see that, then literally these folks will just disappear. I don't know where they go, but they can't. They're not around.
I mean, feel free to use any level of my story to help bet when people argue with you. Yeah. Why do we need this? I'll tell you why you need it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what happens. If you don't have these rules in place, then people will take advantage in a big, huge, crazy, terrible way. In a way that I was like, what?
You're leading me exactly to what I wanted to say. Improv's top. And I just feel that what I learned about humanity from doing improv and teaching it and all that is humans, the one part that, greed is this constant that it does happen in humans. And it's like, I don't know if we could just remove that or have that be like taken seriously. Cause, look at your story. What you had was like maybe one event that probably happened and that snowballed from one human to another with whatever action led to another, corrupt action led to another. And then it's in all of us. That's why I also really champion this accountability, because I'm like, I can, as much as I can try my best, relax, knowing that my John Gabritatios' own personal greed and, you know, will be at least minimized or slowed down or capped with some just, these are healthy tools. But it also is like, why not try to live the best life experience ever? Why not try to, you know, have the most ideal life you can? And if sometimes these tools are necessary, then let them be, let use them.
I feel like there's a lot in life that tries to tell us that living a bad life, like making negative decisions, stealing, doing bad things is good. You know, there's a lot of, I mean, reflect for a moment on every billionaire we know, right? They're not making all of the best decisions, but they've got billions of dollars. So then people are like, oh, well, then I don't have to do it. So, so my thought is, if I'm in a position of being a leader, if I'm in a position where people are looking to me to say, I like her and I want to live my life like her. How can I do it? Then the way that I want to do it is to show them that you can be a kind person, that you can, have doors open to everybody, that every person can have open opportunities and do what, you know, to be able to do what's going on. Like, I went to, I remember the first time my mind was personally opened to the idea of diversity. It was maybe 8 years ago. I was at a South by Southwest event, and it was like a, panel, and it was a diversity panel. I was not in the panel. I was the tech person at the space for the panel. And it was, I love that. I love when I learn things, even though I'm like, I'm just here to press this button. And then you're like, what? Guys, did you know this? And it was
I show up to like doctors of conferences just to do that same thing. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but you know what? We're going to get some good keynote presentations.
Oh my God. My husband watched a open heart surgery on a, on the screen one time. He works doctors conferences legit. And he was like, today I literally watched the inside of a person's heart. And I was like, what? Like, so yes, you never know. Get in there with other things. You're like, oh, I don't know what this is. This is about me. Oh, I don't know. It, maybe it's not about you. Doesn't mean it's not good lessons to be learned. And the number one takeaway that I took away from that panel was that, like, why wouldn't you, it's like, why wouldn't you want to use every color in the rainbow? Why wouldn't you want the knowledge and the difference? And like, oh, well, all the same people are from the same side of town, so they know where to park. Great. Wait, that's not the only thing we're worried about here. We need to know about how the whole city deals with stuff. We need to know how young people feel, how older people feel, how people feel that live in this neighborhood and that neighborhood, who look like this, who look like that, who've had good times, who've had bad times. Because the only way that you can really build a community is to acknowledge all of these things. Like, even the negativity that we're talking about. We've been a bit mired in negativity when it comes to experiences that we've had. But I think that it is super important to recognize that they happen, and that just because there is negativity that happens, it is part of the landscape to take in and to reflect back. Yeah, it turns out that people are going to be jerks. How do we deal with the way that they're jerks, right? Do we, are we fighting with them in a large sense? Maybe, sometimes. I've definitely screamed and yelled at quite a few people. But are there other ways to deal with it? Yeah. I've had some quiet discussions about why people can never come back to the theater. I've had some just me and the other person in the space where I do that all the time. I think I'm invincible. Like, I had this one guy and I kicked him out of the theater, but I stupidly set it up so that like he would come and meet me and we were like alone in a space when I was like, let me tell you the reasons why you can't ever come back to this theater. And then when he left, I was like, wow, that was super dangerous and you probably shouldn't have done that. But you know, we learn from all these things. And in order for us to be able to create, especially in the creative community, what do we want if not everyone's story? What are we interested in if not the myriad of perspectives in the world? Gosh, I mean, how did half of us got into acting? Because we were like, I would like to see how other people perceive their lives, not mine. You know, like, so I'm going to do this role. And I'm, what's this? Oh, he grew up in an orphanage in you know, England. Oh, interesting. Let's figure out what that's like, you know? Why wouldn't we be more open to every right. single voice and every single performer and every single perspective and idea, mm-hmm. especially in improv. Oh my God, give me more ideas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I hear the same ones over and over, it's like, no. Yeah. I want new ideas, new excitement.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When we were at Latchkey's, back to the childhood thing, mm-hmm. This made me think of, like, what was it that there was this one time the older Latchkey kids put on a skit about just home life, and they had a wig, they had wigs, you know, one of the kids dressed up as grandpa and grandma, and I saw them eating real Pringles, though, while doing this little, like, skit play for us. And I was like, whoa, they can eat real food. Like, so that made me wonder of like about commitment and how cool that is to see when people just commit to the play too. Like, they're just like, I'm this character. And I was like, this dude, I know this dude. He's a problem. Like, he's not for play. This guy playing grandpa, he's like, I was like blown away. Like, what is he doing? He's really like expressing himself. I was like, I was transformed in a like meaningful way. I was like, this dude who rarely talks to people, he's kind of aloof. He's dangerous in his own. He's like an older kid. It was just, but he found a thing. And in watching him do that, I swear to God, I just saw like a magic trick like happen moment to moment to moment. I was like, he's still in it. And this is not a bad play. And it was like my first time watching theater was these people that I knew. So I was even more like, oh, this is like, it's a part of what we do. I just felt like I'm a human. I'm probably like five. And this is a part of, we do this. So when they talk about the arts not being, you know, of value, I don't know. However I can measure that, I would say it's like insignificant. Like, that changed me profoundly. I couldn't go back. And I had a tool to like not only cope, but express myself. And how else can it, you know, a young person with immeasurable odds stacked against them, like, navigate without some sort of device? I thank my lucky stars every day that I can at least talk so that I can be charming if I can be. That's my luck. Like, I would be unhoused for sure. I know me. And if I didn't have this ability to just be like, hey, couch surfing or whatever I need to say to like get where I need to be, I would be out there right now surfing somewhere. Forget like, you know, an improv, anything. Like, no, I would be looking for food, water, shelter, maybe a cell phone. But luckily, I know how to talk, and it's helped me a lot. And I'm just like, wow. So yeah, I think a lot about that, and how, you know, take it or leave it. But I like to think of like all the time, like, why am I doing this? Where did this come from? Why do I want to do this? And that keeps me grounded to know that, like, oh, it's just something from within that I can't really fight. So it's just going to have to happen. Yeah. And whether it be, you know, an improv or a movie or writing an advertisement, whatever expression, whatever way, it'll probably be the same. Like, it would be the same, you know, sense of like need to do it and do it like with all of me.
I love that the kids in your neighborhood are like writing plays. By the way, I like that you called it Latchkey Life. I was like, is that the name of the play?
It should be.
It was great. No, I mean, that's legit. I'm like, dude, I understand. Like, when you said Latchkey, I was like, what?
Let's write that cartoon.
It's just for Gen X. Like, people are like, what do you mean? I would never let my child home alone. And you're like, oh, okay. You must be young then. I get it.
Yeah.
You're like, what? I was alone tons. Like, to the point where I have these huge, I have a sister, right? I have these huge memories of just being alone for hours. Yeah. And I'm like, where was my sister? Like, what was I doing? How did I do this? Right.
I'm derailing, but I love this idea. It's not okay, but it was our real life. Like, sleeping in the kitchen on the kitchen chairs, I would like stack them next to each other and be there like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning to like five, you know, when one parent was like, or they had to like overlap. It's like, yeah, sometimes you're just going to have to face the scariest time of day alone in a dimly lit kitchen. Like the idea of like, am I looking at a person staring at me in the corner, or is that just like a coat hanger? Like, I played that game so many times. It just removes a fear now where I just go towards the thing. I just go, no. What is it? Like, you just get, you know, I feel like our generation just kind of has, you just kind of, you know.
I am always walking into dark alleys I shouldn't walk into. You're totally right. Yeah. I'm like, I'll find yes, out. I'm walking exactly. Directly. I'm just punching forward, thinking, well, I'll hit someone if they're there.
Yeah, because ghosts are real, ghosts are not, who cares? Either way, I will figure it out.
All right, like, that's all right, but is it the kind of ghost that can hurt me? Because if it's not, then, you know, good luck to you. You're dead, I'm not, so right. I'm going to eat these Pringles. And
exactly.
Sorry, don't be jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's funny. I love that the neighborhood was so theatrical. Is that a function of the fact that Minneapolis is like a huge theater town? Like, I mean, there's like theaters constantly everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
If I learned anything when I was growing up taking theater classes and went to college for theater, everyone was always talking, oh, Minneapolis, oh, it's amazing, so much theater. I mean, is that why you guys are doing plays? You're like, honestly, it's what we do.
Honestly, that has to be 100% the reason. And God bless those white women who were married to wealthy men back in the day when they decided to bring arts to the Twin Cities, because I was able to be a patron of Latchkey Kids or whatever, you know.
Latchkey Life.
A Latchkey Life.
Trademark.
Was a lot, you know what? There was a lot of field trips to the theater now looking back at it. I mean... We have trained all of us to really appreciate live theater. Like, everybody is a good patron here. Like, people know what type of audience member to be. I believe that's also why this is good for music, because people know how to be good audiences for music shows. I think, it is good. It is really good. It moves people. My friend Jack Ruler, he was the founder of Mixed Blood Theater, one of the many theaters, but he's like the founder, and he's retired. Now he just retired. This is his first year into retirement. And I was like, what are you going to do? Like, you've just been producing and making. What are you going to do here in the Twin Cities? Like, and he's just like, you know, I got into theater because I wanted to help, but I think I want to pick a route that helps in a more like action concrete way that's like real time, like I believe you said, something like a mediator, right? Like, a, you know, somebody go into neighborhoods and kind of, you know, resolve issues that can be high conflict, a lot of tension in these areas. He wants to bring direct, you know, action to that, and I respect that. I totally get it. Yeah. And I think that's been a lot of the dichotomy or the different ways that I see from my point of view, from John Gibbertatios. It has always been astounding to me that we can fill up these theaters with so many people, and you hear about so many sponsors and so many charitable contributions. And at the same time, you walk outside the theater and there's literally people strung out, homeless, and can't afford anything. I think when you grow up, from my point of view, it's very clear, you know, what society's trying to tell me what my role is going to be. I'll say that. But it's been a tool that you can use to help you express yourself again. And it's been kind of nice that I've been thankful to have like mentors and people, black men, you know, growing up that were very, very much into, look, ain't no budget for it, and I only got you for about 15, 20 minutes, so I'm going to teach you this drill, this dance line number, everybody get online. You don't play the drums, it's okay, just grab a stick and everybody knows rhythm, you got rhythm, okay, just watch what I do. I got 5 minutes left, I need you to pick those knees up when you go, left knee, right knee, left knee, all right, I'll be back, hopefully we have costumes. That guy never came back. We never did the drum line. We never did the parade. But what he gave us in that little moment, man, that stuck with me forever. Oh. He said right away, first day out the gate, you are award-winning drill team. We never did drill before, but we believed it. And after that, I continued to do, you know, some drumming here and there, and I respected performance. And
may I say that I think that part of what our job is, especially since you and I started performing on our own and now we are teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The move to being a teacher is the beginning of wanting to connect with the other people. It's the beginning of wanting to give that confidence, that belief to the people like that guy did. He made you feel like you could be the number one award winning drill team like in the world, right? And you're like, yeah, I am. I'm amazing. Look at these knees. See how high they are? Right. Like,
yeah.
But that's the key.
Y'all gonna get this work looking at people watching. Yeah, you like that,
Yeah. But even to bring it back to where we were talking about up top, which is like, turns out we have a skill not everybody has. We didn't know because all the people I hang out with are just like you and me, who are like loud, confident people who are like, I'll do it. What? I'll walk into that dark alley. Don't worry. I got it. Yeah. But most people are not like that. And we are here to like help train them to believe in themselves so they can go become mediators places, so that they can go and actually put action out there and not just perform. I mean, I feel like tons of people that I've been talking to, people who I thought, oh, they're actors. And I mean, actors, where it's like, they're not, their highest goal is to maintain equity, right? Like, like that's what they're looking to do, right?
That's
opposed to actors who are like, I have a stage, I have a voice, and I have an audience, and I'm going to use those things to help the world in great ways. Does it always work? No, not always. You try. Yeah. You can be like, hey, did you guys know that you should hang out with these people because they're cool? And they're like, who is that lady? But you find your niche and you find out who's going to listen and how you can communicate to them and how you can use these skills that we have to go out there and make it better. When you brought up the mediator thing, it made me think of my mom. She was a first grade teacher growing up, which now that I'm older and she's older, I'm all like, you were a first grade teacher? Because she's not that type, right? In my mind. Yeah. Right. She was a first grade teacher. She got involved in politics. And then later, when I was in high school, her job was a mediator for teachers. She would go in when the teachers were fighting with their principals or with someone else, and she'd be the center person who's all like, okay, we're going to resolve this argument. Yeah. And that is who she was. I mean, like, that's the skill that she was developing when she went to, you know, when she went to school to be a teacher. Yeah. I mean, and you know, think about our parents and how old what the world was like when they were around. Right. She was like, she went to college and people were like, what? You went to college? Why? Why don't you just marry a rich man? And she's like, that's not really my plan. Thanks, though, for the thought. And, you know, she's like, she got a degree and everyone thought she was crazy. They were like, why waste all that energy? And she's like, I'm going to change the world, okay? And she does. You know, like keeps in contact, does that stuff. And I think it's just a matter of, to bring it back even to something else we were talking about, allowing yourself to evolve, allowing your journey to evolve, allowing the theater world to evolve, allowing the world around us to evolve. And perhaps to bring it back to the other thing we were talking about, how I was saying, like, people don't like themselves and they let that negativity out. They're also afraid of the evolving, afraid of letting the world become a new thing, afraid of moving to the next level. Everyone right now is like, oh my God, the post-COVID world is so depressing and like it's going to be terrible. Is it though? Is it? Are they really terrible? Because my kid who's 4, who wears a mask every day to school, doesn't complain about it. He doesn't care because he's unaware that there's a choice of like, oh, well, the world was different. And now, no, let the world be what it is and let the new ideas just make everything better, right? Like, we have to be open to evolution. We have to be open to becoming better artists, to becoming better people. And if we're not open to the journey in a larger sense, like, you know, we won't be able to do it. We won't be able to make the world a better place or even just make the world livable.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I like that so much. And I think, Yes, and the component is because I'm thinking of a person like myself who would probably hear this and be like, "What? Where? What in the what? What in the puking rainbows and unicorns and daisies?" And no, it's not like that. You're saying you're making a bed that you want to sleep in. We all know that now. Let's make the bed you want to sleep in, like, for yourself. Like, hold yourself up in your own accountability. Like, step into it. And then, but, like, also know that that's pretty cool. Like, the world is going to be different. But guess what? It was going to be different either way if there was, like, a pandemic or not. Like, it was going to evolve regardless. And if and this is the point I want to highlight that I think we don't touch enough is – the world will be different and hard, but for who? For you? To what degree? And I say that because the feeling that I tend to feel a lot of heartbreak about is I've seen how a pandemic can look in other ways, like right outside our theaters. Like, I know many of people that have been destitute and struggling, and nobody cared, and nobody who had resources was able to provide them with proper care. And so when I hear like a lot of folks, I just feel like, man, this is probably the first time the fire has like been this close to your feet. And I hear that and I get that, but I just want you to know that's like this places you can take that energy if you're really that concerned about the fire, because it's been ablaze for a long time. So I want to add to that when we talk about allowing the evolution to take place, take that into account while we're allowing.
Yeah. That's smart. I like that. I like the fire at your feet metaphor. I think that's really great. Like, I'm sorry that this is the first time that this happened to you, but it's here all the time for most of us. And these are helpful ways for you to handle that. You know, sometimes
I need you to know this. I need you to be aware and part of this team that's aware. Like, I need you though. I need you to be good to yourself because I need you to join this. Like, we need you. I want to add that too. Like, you know, this is not like here's get in line and figure it out. This is like a no, please, because the only way this works is you at your best, fully here and present with us. Like,
You know what? We talked about sort of a negative view, both myself and you, of things that we've learned with improv. But one of the things that you just made me think of that I love about improv so much and that I didn't see a lot of when I was doing other theater is that it's a team aspect. We all have to be in it together. And like you said just now, and that was so on point, the idea of like, we need you. We need you to take care of yourself so that we can all be in this together because we work better as a team. And that is such an improv thing. Like, once I got into improv and I was like, I don't have to be alone. Yeah. I don't have to just figure this thing out by myself. We can all do this as a unit. And the other thing about the pandemic, which is tough on one side, but great on the other, is that my community, my team is now everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not just Austin. I mean, again, Austin, wonderful improv town, great people. Even when my school had the negative thing, every other school in town came in, swooped in to help, to have our back, to take care of the people who were lost and hurt and in pain. And we, as a community of 5 or 6 schools, improv schools, created like solid rules for like what we were going to allow and what we were going to have okay in our spaces and stuff like that. And that's great. But now that I'm online, it's everywhere. It's every city. Every city, every improv school in this country, we are all in this together. We need to be good to each other and take care of each other. And in the whole Canada, Mexico, every country, South America, Australia, Europe, all of the improvisers, they know that mentality of teamwork. They know about being together. And now that we can all talk, now that we can all discuss that in a larger sense, it's like how do we, I know we have cultural differences. We have different ways that we look at things. We have different like rules in our countries, but we all agree. We want people to be safe. We want people to feel free to create, and we want to take care of each other. And I think that that's my favorite part about improv. And the thing that I'm like, I'm always like, y'all, improv could save the world. And why are we not? Could we just talk to the UN? Because we could do like a sweet workshop. They would get it. They would be like, wait, we're making wrong decisions. Like, you are making wrong decisions.
Yeah.
We're a group. We're a team. We're a community.
Let's talk about that. That's a part two. I would love that discussion.
Yes, you're right. I opened up a door. We could talk like 6 years about this thing. So wait, let me ask you our final question then, because you're great.
Can you imagine talking to Paul? Hey, stop everything you're doing. Have you ever played Bunny Bunny? I think this whole bilateral thing's just a little off kilter. Let's just warm up with a little, clams are great or whatever. You pick the item or animal or bean, whatever. I just, before we start voting, okay.
Listen, Israeli army, let's just calm down for a second. Let's just do a quick game. Let's just do a quick round
Count to 20.
Yeah.
Silent count to 20. Nobody, okay, eyes closed. Okay.
All right, we're going to do this. It's going to be great. We're going to play a game. It's called New Choice. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Yeah, that's right. Well, North Korea, South Korea. All right. You two are in the scene.
New Choice.
And let's go. Oh, yeah. That would be, I think that's the answer. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Wow. I mean, I know that it sounds ridiculous and insane, but if we could actually accomplish it, it might be all right. I mean,
absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Oh, so intense.
All right, everyone, bring it in for one last round of Hotspot. We've got translators in your ear. Just no wrong choices. Come on.
Yeah, sing along. Sing along. That's right. I love a good Lithuanian folk song myself. Let's do it. That's right. Oh, man. This would be great. I'm telling you. all right. But wait. So we've had a great deep discussion today. I love it. But let's talk. My final question for you is going to be about, for you, this has been a wild time, but you're a creative person. You're creating things. What is it in the world right now that you are using to creatively fill up your own cup? Like, what are you doing to make yourself, grow and evolve creatively?
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know. I guess I've just kind of been in a very lucky space that I didn't know would be as inspiring as it is. But I'm not trying to make this an answer of like, well, what I do ends up giving me inspiration because what I do is important and it's important. I'm important.
Okay.
But what has happened is that in trying to find like practical ways to give these, like we were talking about earlier, we believe everyone deserves an opportunity. This is just a thing that we believe. And so in thinking about how to get that, a band together of folks who don't typically get opportunities and watching what comes out of that, knowing that this is special, what I'm witnessing, because I've, like you, we've seen a lot of different stories and a lot of different ways of executing these said stories or sketches or what have you. But to watch, like what comes out in those things, I didn't even know, we talk about it all the time, a lot of exercises were just accidents or someone just kind of made it up or whatever, some of these games that we know about, but some of those things that I have a BIPOC jam every month and it's just for, BIPOC people and all levels experience. But I think it's profoundly inspiring to me in that I know that the thing that's bringing everyone together in that moment is improv, but it's filtered through a layer of, I can relax because me being of color is okay. It's more than okay. It's amazing. It's great. We applaud it. We love it. We love you. And what I see is this evolution that happens from the beginning of the jam, I'm talking minute to minute, to the end of the jam, of individuals' confidence, that is a different thing that I can't I couldn't write how that would go. Like no many different ways I try to think about it. I never would imagine that this person would have had a breakthrough just by doing this sort of like game or exercise, and then watching what or how they apply their like Sunny, how Sunny has a background, Sunny from earlier in the story about the girl in the alley, she's a rapper. So, and she does crump dance, and like that's her, she's an artist and that's her art. She's doing the improv, you know, and just exploring, but like to watch what she's brought is really cool, and it inspires me because I love hip hop and I just love the components of it that she brings to improv that actually feeds in beautifully. I'm talking about just like even bold choices, right? It's just that hip hop kind of has, and when she does it, you go, yes. And to know that she can dial it up, dial it down, she knows what she's doing with playing with levels without having any acting classes. So I'm just like, whoa, that inspires me to just keep tapping into what's already here. Keep, you know, that's whatever's, you're already enough, you are enough. And then that's an example of that to me. That's a practical, clear cut look at like, oof, she just showed up as herself, and it has more than enough. It was amazing. And it just took a couple of adjustments, you know, to really frame it how it should be framed instead of the, you know, way society will build stereotypes on people. So, yeah, I think that inspires me. And I hate to, you know, this is kind of unfortunate, but it's not too many people that get to do that. I mean, if you're a person of color, you can do it anytime you want. You can set that up however you wish. But I just say that, like, very few people would understand that, like, direct, that specifically. I mean, there's some equivalencies to it, that, but that's very specific. And especially in the time that we're in, living in the city, you know, that I mean, and then, yeah, all these things, it really does, you know, and it inspires me in a way that I need to have for my imagination. Even though the things that I want to do, the world doesn't really have a place in their grand imagination for, I need to be in those rooms to have that shown to me just from my brain, so then I can move forward going, nah, I've already seen this, so you can't tell me this can't happen. I've seen it. And that's, yeah, I love that. Sorry, that's a long answer. You probably could just do the last sentence. But that is inspiring.
No, and I'm excited to hear that you're not only are you finding a space to give space to other people who really need it, and you're like opening the doors and showing people that like they're worth it and that they have a safe environment to create in whatever way that they are. But I'm also just like really excited that you're like so actively in it right now. I'm like, I feel so distant from teaching. I haven't really taught in a long time. I did some online stuff, but like, hearing you, I'm like, oh man, that's so exciting. He's in the thick of it. Like you're teaching and you have like students and you're like, you've got a whole like community that you're working with. And it's like, oh God, that sounds so great. I can't wait to get back to it. And it's exciting for me to just be like, oh, it is happening. Okay. Yeah. He's doing it. I can try to get back into that and figure out what that means for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're already. Yeah. Just you're connecting. Yeah. Good. I'm glad. I'm again, like we were saying, I need you. I'm glad. You're feeling inspired by that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is wonderful. Well, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your stories with me and your experience. It has been such a great talk. Like, I feel like we hit so many important topics and I'm thank you for giving me your time.
Oh, thank you. Honor is mine. My pleasure. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.